Decker and Hayes, Season 2, Episode 1, Dreaming of Babylon, by Lynn Nelson. Babylon, the garbage disposal in the broken-down tenement that was Parlor Town. This drab, gray building was heavily lined in barbed wire and housed the most depraved of the depraved. Rapists, child molesters, drug lords, murderers, and now, detectives. Macy Hayes was half of Parlor Town's only true savior, the Decker and Hayes Detective Agency. At the end of her last case, Macy had shot a man out of revenge and, incidentally, in the interest of justice. Rather than delve into the sordid past that had brought her to that point, Macy accepted the charges facing her and made the doomed journey to Babylon. She'd spent the last 550 days behind its bars, knitting furiously. If there was one thing to be said about Macy, she brought color to Parlor Town, even to its prison. She made potholders, oven mitts, coasters, things Stella would never use. She had sent each one home with a letter telling Stella that she would use them when she returned, and Stella had lovingly placed each one in the cupboard in the kitchen. She'd gotten used to tying her own tie each morning, at ignoring the voice in her head that reminded her of Macy's sentence, 25 to life, cold-blooded murder. Vengeance and rage at their peak in Parlor Town, even the crime fighters are falling prey. But Macy made her way, concentrating on her knit, purl, knit, purl, and Stella tightened the knots and straightened the ties, and neither of them broke the optimistic tone of Macy's letters. Business hadn't been extraordinarily good for Stella, but what else was new? She'd picked up a few cases in the last year and a half, and she had the help of some close friends. Tommy Potsdam, her skinny, effeminate secretary, had been beefing up with Tai Bo classes and avoiding women since being poisoned and double-crossed by his last girlfriend. Julian McGinnis, a fellow detective and sometimes rival, was offering moral support and the occasional extra right hook in between dates with people far too beautiful for him. Sitting at her desk in her office, Stella was absent-mindedly playing with one of Macy's coasters when her intercom buzzed suddenly and nearly knocked her off her chair.
Miss Decker, a man here to see you.
Stella put the coaster in a drawer and pressed the button on her intercom.
Tell him I don't swing that way, kid.
The door between Stella's office and the lobby opened gently, and a slim, blonde man in his mid-30s slid around it. He was dressed in a well-fitting black suit and carried a briefcase. He spoke in a smooth, friendly tone from the door.
This is hardly a marriage proposal. May I?
Stella raised a brow, but motioned him to the chair in front of her desk. The man closed the door quietly, walked over to the desk, and offered his hand to Stella. Her intercom buzzed again.
He's a tad persistent, Miss Decker.
Thanks, Tommy.
Derek Washburn.
Stella remained seated, but shook his hand firmly.
Stella Decker.
The man took a seat in the chair, his legs together, his briefcase on his lap. He nervously fingered the latches on the case, and shifted his eyes from Stella to her desk, and back again.
So, why are you avoiding the fuzz, Mr. Washburn?
I'm sorry.
It's a joke, sir. Usually when a client comes to me, there's a reason they can't go to the police. Or perhaps the police aren't very affected, though. You didn't hear that from me. Far be it from me to joke in such serious times, though. So what seems to be the problem?
Oh, of course. Well, I suppose I'll get right to it, then.
Derek spun some dials on his briefcase, opened both latches, and balanced it precariously open on his lap. He shifted nervously through his papers and talked in a business-like manner into his case.
My son has been kidnapped. He is 6 years old. He has been missing for 2 weeks.
Derek produced a 4x6 color photo of a small, blonde boy and handed it across the desk. Stella accepted the photo and looked it over. The boy was in denim overalls and a blue and white striped shirt. He had a big grin on his face.
I take it you really didn't go to the police.
Derek then produced from his briefcase an 8.5x11 piece of printed paper. On the paper were cut and pasted words from various magazines.
Daniel is safe, but not for long. He likes to sing a very sad song. He really misses good old Pops, but he'll cry if you call the cops. $1 million, 1 month's time, the punishment must fit the crime. I see.
I couldn't call the police. Danny's life is at risk.
But you chose to contact me. Aren't you afraid that they'll know that?
I had to do something. Besides, I trust you ladies. I've heard very good things. And I trust a former agent to treat this properly. Will you and Miss Hayes take the case? You're my only hope. You realize this, of course.
Stella looked the young man up and down. He had closed his expensive briefcase, smoothed his expensive suit, crossed his legs and revealed his expensive, well-polished shoes.
Where did you say you were from, Mr. Washburn?
Why, Parlortown, of course. I'm from here.
You must live on the edge of town, then.
Yes, of course.
Stella paused for a few moments, her eyes mesmerized by the reflective power of his leather-bound toes. She looked him in the eye.
I will require an upfront fee as well as provisions. You understand this?
Yes, of course.
Good. See Mr. Potsdam at the desk out there about finances.
Derek got up, grinning like a kid, and shook Stella's hand heartily.
I can't thank you enough, Miss Decker, and please pass that on to Miss Hayes. Is she out to lunch?
We'll be in touch, Mr. Washburn.
Stella pushed the button on her intercom.
Hey, kid. Hetero coming your way. Draw him up some papers, will ya?
Righto, Miss Decker.
Meanwhile, Macy was starting a set of placemats when a guard appeared outside her cell.
Got a visitor, young lady.
The guard led Macy out and escorted her to a small room with several tables. A few of them were occupied by prisoners and family. At a corner table sat a stocky man in a crisp suit. At his side stood a slim, dark-haired woman in an equally crisp, though more fashionable, suit. They both sported name tags on their left lapels, and the woman smiled brightly when Macy approached the table.
Oh my God, Lexi? Excuse me, Alexis. God, I never thought I'd see you again.
Listen, I can't hug you or anything, but...
She motioned to the guard standing watch at the door.
But have a seat.
Well, gee, you're all dolled up and I haven't even had time to do my hair.
You haven't changed a bit, Macy.
God, how long has it been?
12 years.
Macy, this is Matthew Landsberg. He's the head of our organization now.
Macy looked over the unfamiliar man with the chunky gold ring on his left hand. A class ring of some sort? She couldn't see. But it was ugly, and she didn't like it. She didn't remember the name or the face at all.
12 years, huh? That's a long time. Your girls must be really big by now.
High school. They think that they're adults. But they still sleep with the blankets that you knitted them.
Well, this is sweet, girls, but Miss Grayson, you and I have business, and I'm sure Miss Hayes will want to get back to darning her socks or what have you.
I'm sorry, what did you say your name was?
Matthew Landsberg, Macy. It's okay, we're here to help.
We'd like to talk to you about your days in Russia, Miss Hayes. Specifically, about information you sent to us from Russia, and...
One of the pudgy man's eyebrows raised itself, and his oily, thick lips drew themselves into a knowing smirk.
About information you didn't send to us from Russia.
What is this?
Please, Miss Hayes. We're offering you a chance at freedom here.
Just how exactly do you plan to do that? I assume you've been keeping up with the news? I'm a cold-blooded killer, Mr. Landsberg. And no amount of gold on your fingers can change that fact, sir.
The guard appeared at the table, straightening Macy's shoulders.
Keep it so we can hear it, sweet cheeks.
The guard returned to the door, and Matthew Landsberg continued, unfazed.
Now is not the time for games, Miss Hayes. I don't think you have to search your memory very hard to figure out just what it is we're discussing here. The very important information we received from you while you were in Russia has now, 12 years later, proven to be insufficient. As a result, lives are at stake. Important lives. This is big, Miss Hayes. My offer is as follows. You give me enough information to satisfy me, and you get to leave this prison.
That seems a little too easy.
They told me you were sharp.
Funny, they told me nothing about you.
You prove to me that I can trust you, that you're in this, and I'll get you out of here. You will be released into our custody until the matter is settled. During this time, you will help me deal with the information you originally withheld, and you will try not to kill anyone in the process. That is, you will try not to kill anyone unnecessarily, and if you do have to kill someone, you'll try not to get caught. You help me, and keep yourself clean, and you're a free woman.
Macy maintained a cold, distant stare that slid back and forth between the fat man and her former partner.
Let me talk to my attorney.
She was out the door. She was escorted back to the cell she shared with three other women. She stood on the inside of the sliding door for a minute after the guard had locked it. She drank in the sight. Three other women in matching gray suits, lounging uncomfortably in their standard-issue bunk beds. In the bed above hers was a woman who'd shot her husband and his girlfriend when she found them in bed together. In the top bunk on the other side of the cell was a large-scale coke dealer, and below her a woman who'd shot her girlfriend, also over an affair. They were all reading fashion magazines or Home and Garden, and they were the best friends Macy could have found in her predicament. She sighed and settled into knitting in her bunk. It was stiflingly hot, and this wasn't exactly our five-star penitentiary, so everyone tried to move as little as possible. After dinner, the guard returned.
Yo, Miss Congeniality, you've got another friend.
Jesus, what now?
She was escorted to the same table.
Stell!
Hey, Mace. How are they treating you in here, huh?
Oh, they've been leaving me alone since you threatened that other inmate, and I've got my friends and stuff. They're good gals, and I'm starting on some placemats for us. It's been kind of a weird day.
You and me both, babe. Listen, anyone around here know about your days in the agency?
What? How did you... No, not around here. In the city there's a few, but I haven't seen them in, oh gosh, north of 10 years. What's the deal?
We got a client today. Mentioned how he trusted you to handle this case because of your agency training.
Trusted me to handle it? I don't understand.
Neither did I, but I'm sort of putting it together. He knows about your past, but he doesn't know about where you are, so I figure he's not from around here.
Well, where did he say he was from?
That's the thing. This blondie comes waltzing in a suit, and I mean a real expensive deal. Saying he's from the town, specifically from the edge of town, I sort of roped him into that part, but he was lying through his teeth. Gave me some song and dance about his kid being kidnapped. He had a photo and a ransom note and everything. Seemed honest and upset enough, but for obvious reasons. I found it fishy. Only took it because he mentioned you.
Did you bring the photo?
Stella grinned and handed over the picture.
Told him it was your kid.
Macy looked over the photo. She didn't recognize the kid. She handed it back.
And the note?
Well, I couldn't bring it, obviously, so you'll have to use your skills of memorization. It's sort of a poem, and it's pretty straightforward, but the end is kind of cryptic. I'm gonna have to have a chat with our client, but I wanted to see if it made sense to you first. So just look at me and smile like I'm telling you about home.
Stella looked indeed like she was telling some sort of cute anecdote from home as she recited for Macy the poem from the ransom note. Macy listened patiently and thought for a moment.
Listen, Stella, something's happening. I don't really know who to trust right now, but let's stay on this one. Huh. Two cases in one day, and I'm a criminal. Business is better than we thought, huh, babe?
I'm sorry, what? You're taking a case?
Listen, I know Julian was hesitant about representing me being out of practice and being friends with me and all, but I need a real attorney now, not a court-appointed schmuck who's going to get me locked away forever. This is deep, Stell, and we can trust Jules. Will you impress that upon him? This is important.
Well, geez, Macy, of course, but what is this all about?
This is about Alexis Grayson and the Mother Country.
Has Macy ever had a pristine past? Where did Matthew Landsberg come from? And what's his connection to our heroines? Will Tommy ever love again? Tune in next week for at least some of these answers in the next installment of Decker and Hayes, Shadows of Gotham City.